This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com. This program is intended for mature audiences only.
Welcome to Just for Women, Dating, Relationships, and Sex. I'm your host, Elisa Kreitman. This show is dedicated to providing today's modern women with useful information they need to make empowered, conscious choices. This month, we've been talking about what might be on the minds of a lot of women out there, planning a wedding. So whether your wedding is 8 months from now or 2 months from now or 2 weeks from now, we're going to get a lot of juicy information from an author and bridal counselor, Cheryl Paul. And so today we're going to talk to Cheryl about a lot of information that's in her book, The Conscious Bride, Women Unveil Their True Feelings About Getting Hitched. So Cheryl Paul, welcome to Just for Women.
Thank you.
So let me tell people a little bit about you. You've got a master's in counseling psychology, and you're a bridal counselor specializing in helping women understand the emotions that arise during the engagement, wedding, and the first year of marriage. And I actually have your Conscious Bride book as well as the Conscious Bride workbook, and they are fantastic. So any woman who's out there planning a wedding, thinking about it, or even who's married, must read. And also, you're married with a son, and congratulations, just found out you're pregnant.
Yahoo. Yes, thank you.
So awesome. And listeners, you can find Cheryl Paul at ConsciousWeddings.com and ConsciousMotherhood.com. So Cheryl, I think my listeners really care about, you know, what's involved with the engagement process that goes beyond all the happy faces, parties, and celebration. That goes into the not-so-talked-about, maybe even dark side of getting married, the emotions, the feelings that not everybody's talking about. So I'm really excited to explore this with you today.
Great. That's an important topic, and you're right. Very few people are still talking about it.
Yay. So what I want to cover are the three phases of transition that women go through: rites of separation, the wedding day, and the first year. And I know it's a lot, and if it's too much, I'm going to have you back. So I want you to tell us what we really need to know about each topic, and just let it rip, because like we said, you know, there's a lot here, and I don't want to miss anything. So let's start in. You know, like we were saying, engagement is supposed to be this happy, exciting time. And as I was telling you a little earlier, I'm engaged and I'm just going through it. So let's talk about that. What do we need to know about this shadow side of this really important time in our lives?
Well, a lot of the shadow comes from the fact that we expect as women this time to be perfectly happy and blemish-free and joyous and on cloud nine, and that's just not the case for most women. There are elements of that, and sometimes you feel that right after the proposal, and sometimes you don't, and sometimes you feel it as the wedding nears, and sometimes you don't. So there's a lot of fantasy and expectation and conditioning about how we think an engagement is supposed to feel, how we think we're supposed to feel about the person we're marrying, a lot of false beliefs and mythology around the idea of love and in-loveness and weddings. So all of that comes into play for many women pretty soon after they start the planning and start getting serious about actually getting married. When the reality is there's a lot of grief and loss about letting go of the single life, letting go of a certain lifestyle and identity and attachment to that identity, realizing that by saying yes to one person, you're saying no to every other potential partner on the planet. So people's commitment issues come into play. People's difficulty making decisions is often very high on the list of reasons why people call me, as they have a hard time committing and just saying yes and trusting themselves enough to know that this is the right decision for them or the wrong decision. A lot of doubt comes into play, and people in our culture tend to equate doubt with don't. So if you have any doubt, you think, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with my relationship? I'm not supposed to be doubting. When, in many cases, the women that I counsel, the women that come to my website, my message board, doubt is a healthy part of any huge decision, whether you're buying a house or picking a college or moving or starting a new job. It's very natural to doubt the decision.
I really like what you're saying. You know, you're really sort of normalizing the emotions that are coming up and all of these things that are coming up, doubt. It's like a reframe where we can actually go, oh, I'm not crazy. This doesn't mean no. I can go ahead.
That's right. And a lot of it, again, is because as women, we are conditioned to think that that we're not supposed to doubt. Men are allowed to doubt. Men are expected to have cold feet. Right? But for women, it's equated with making a mistake immediately. So if someone's going through the whole gamut of emotions, grief, loss, fear, confusion, doubt, uncertainty, anger, and they start to talk about it with people, they're often met with, well, maybe you're making a mistake, maybe you should rethink this. When in my work, those are all very natural, even necessary emotions that come with the territory of transition. You're letting go of a way of life. You're grieving. It is a death experience, and that's a hard word for people to digest, especially in connection to a wedding. But there is a dying process that happens, and along with that, a lot of grief, a lot of tears, a lot of loss, a lot of questioning, all of the normal emotions that would go along with any kind of loss. The problem only being that we don't understand that with a wedding, there is a loss. Now, the plus side is that when you really go through that consciously during the engagement and you don't focus all of your energy on simply the planning, which is the tendency for most women, it's the pull in our culture, is to create this quote-unquote perfect wedding. So you submerge all of those difficult feelings and just focus on the planning, and then they come crashing down on you afterwards, and then you have what I call postbridal depression. People's the affair statistics are very high in the first year of marriage. People haven't done the work. When they do the work, the emotional work, psychological work during the engagement, the benefit is that they're very present for their wedding day. They can actually feel into the experience. They can connect to their partner, which, if it's not about that, what is it about? And then they can use the first year of marriage to explore what it really means to be married, to adjust to the transition, but then to experience the boon of all of this work, which is a sense of rebirth, of new beginning, of exploring possibilities, of discovering new aspects of herself that she never realized were there. And that's, again, true for all transitions. There's the letting go phase, there's the in-between phase, and then there's the new beginning.
I want to go back for a second and talk about getting to an authentic yes. So You said some women come to you, they're having doubts. How do you support women in getting to an authentic yes?
It's a tricky process for a lot of people. Some people, once they weed out all of the fears, and I have very specific exercises for working with the fears. The fear often masks as truth. So the fear is saying, you're making a mistake. He's not the right guy. You can do better. You know, and the trick is, how do you discern between fear and truth? So I give my clients very specific exercises, and the more work they do, again, the better, the faster they'll find their clarity for wading through those fear voices, getting to that truth, getting to what I call the North Star, where you have deep down inside of you, you have that sense of rightness. It may not always be there. It may be buried behind layers and layers of fear, but it is there, or a sense of wrongness if it's just not the right thing. But it is a critically important process for women to go through, and frustrating because they usually want somebody else to tell them you're with the right guy or you're not. Where I can help is they can describe the relationship to me, and I often come back with, are there any red flags? You know, is there any, are you having very strong physical symptoms? Are you having nightmares? Is your partner an alcoholic? Has he been emotionally abusive? Have you had betrayal issues that haven't been worked through?
So you're going to ask things of women that they probably would rather ignore. And so is that what you mean by these layers of fear? Because it sounds like, you know, you were saying this before, like fantasy. We're so geared to have this sort of fantasy, and I think that's why the divorce rate is so high, because we're not doing our work. And we do live in so much fantasy that when these fears come up, it's like, I can't look at that. I'm getting married. This is how it has to go. And, you know, when you talk about getting to that deep core, I think a lot of women, and tell me what you think, they know somewhere deep inside, but they're not willing to admit that when they were getting married, they knew the guy wasn't right for them, but they were too afraid to stop the whole, you know, momentum of the wedding planning.
I would say that that's true, but I will also say that about 95% of my women who come to me, my clients, are with really great guys. And the fantasy is really more around thinking that it should feel different. You know, what if I'm bored sometimes? Is that okay? What if I don't feel in love all the time? Is that okay? So the fantasy, I think it's actually converse from what you're saying, is more around thinking that it should feel like fireworks. It should be Hollywood. It should be the magazines, you know, and having a hard time accepting that real love doesn't usually feel like that past the first 3 months. You know, you have an infatuation phase, but that's not where you base a marriage on. You don't base a marriage on those feelings. You base a marriage on shared values, on a core connection, on, you know, do you have a foundation on which to plant a marriage? And it's not going to live on just the jittery in love feelings that we think you're supposed to have. So for most of my clients, it's actually not about being scared of the truth, because most of my clients are coming to me with very good relationships, very solid relationships with very good men. It's more like, oh, I'm with this great guy. Well, tell me about him. He's honest. He's reliable. He's responsible. He loves me. He listens to me. Well, what's the problem? I can't stop thinking about that ex who just rocked my world.
Mm.
You know, there's often an ex that comes into play, even if it's just mentally. It's usually not literally, but sometimes it is. you know, I'm dreaming about him. I'm thinking about him. I really felt so in love with him in a way that I never have with my fiance. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's more where the fantasy exists, is around our idea in Western culture. It's not all cultures, it's specifically Western culture, heavily promoted by Hollywood, about what love, quote-unquote, should feel like.
Right. Got it. Okay, that's good to know. I'm glad to hear that women are coming to you with great relationships, but they just haven't had the model of, or even the awareness that, no, what you're thinking, what's happening is totally right. It's totally fine. And, you know, we can just come to terms with all the emotions and all the fears that are coming up, that they're normal, and that, yeah, you know, you can go forward knowing that. So, you know, I've read that relationship brings up all the unfinished work or all the wounds and triggers from family, growing up, parents. How can we, do you agree with that? And how can we learn to separate or watch that when it comes up in relationship, and what can we do about it?
Well, I'll start by saying that my work is not specifically focused on relationships aside from what comes up during the engagement process. So it's a bit off topic as far as where my expertise is. Yes, I agree with that for the most part. I don't think it's true in every relationship. And I think that what comes up during engagement is sometimes connected to that, to unfinished business, and sometimes it's just a woman's own individual process around transition. So her fears about marriage may have to do with the fact that her parents got divorced when she was 5. Yes, that's the unfinished business. And the more she addresses that consciously, the more she can realize, okay, that's just my fear. That's what happened in my childhood. My husband-to-be is not my father. You know, he's not a womanizer, or he's not an alcoholic, or whatever the issue was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to come back to the present moment. But I would also like to say that a lot of the focus on the partner is often a distraction from the other issues that arise during the transition. So, you know, I often say to women, you would be having these feelings no matter who you were marrying. You know, it's about the transition much more than it is about the person you're marrying, unless there are real problems in your relationship. But like I said, most times there aren't. Most times the relationship is basically good. It doesn't mean there aren't problems. Every relationship has problems. Every relationship has conflict. But there's a basic rightness. It works. And the issues that are arising have to do with her own transition much more than they have to do with the partner.
That is such a great point. Thank you for saying that. I'm really getting where you're focused on women and the transition. And I realized just in this moment, like, I'm doing that. I'm focusing a lot on my partner in this phase. And thank you for saying that, because it really sort of puts the onus and the responsibility back on me to do my work.
That's right.
Right. And not having it, it's really about the transition. So let's talk more about that. We're going to take a short break to support our sponsors. And listeners, if you want to get some great discounts on things that would totally enhance your life, check out my sponsors. They bring me great experts like Cheryl Paul to you. So if you can support them, I'd greatly appreciate it. I'm Elisa Kreitman. I'm with Cheryl Paul, bridal counselor and author of The Conscious Bride. And we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Renee Stevens, host of Inside Out Weight Loss. If you want to be a thin person, you have to learn how to think like one. Learn how on my weekly show that aligns mind, body, and spirit for lasting change. That's Inside Out Weight Loss, how to think like a thin person on personallifemedia.com.
We're back. I'm Elisa Kreitman. We're talking to Cheryl Paul about how to deal with all of the changes, the fears, the doubts, all the emotions that come up as we plan our wedding during the engagement process. And we were talking about, on the first segment, one big key that I really got was how to not focus on our partner so much and really focus on ourselves, because we're going through this transition. It would be happening with whatever man that we were with. So let's talk a little bit more about what more do you want to tell us about transition? Because I know you have a lot to say about there's phases of these transitions, yeah?
Mm-hmm. There are three phases of transition. The first being the separation phase, when, and this applies again to all transitions, becoming a mother, getting married, moving, job change, losing a loved one. There's countless transitions we go through in our lives. So it's a really wonderful roadmap to help us understand the phases of transition. And they're not always linear. It doesn't always happen ABC, but they do happen. So the first phase is separating from the old life, recognizing fantasies, letting the parts that need to die die. So saying goodbye when you're getting married, it's about saying goodbye to being a single person in the world, saying goodbye to dating, saying goodbye to ever having a first date again is sometimes a hard one for women to swallow. You know, just there's not going to be that newness, the excitement. For some women, it's a huge relief to be out of the dating scene. But even with that relief, there's sometimes an element of grief, of recognizing that an entire phase of life is over. That's often connected to changing one's last name. You know, that's the symbolic representation of an identity shift. So moving from one phase of life to another. and the engagement is largely about the grief, the loss, the letting go. For a lot of people, it comes up around family of origin issues and separating from one's family. It doesn't mean that you say goodbye to them forever. It means that there's a shift that's going to happen as the woman transfers allegiance from her family of origin onto her partner. It's very necessary, needs to happen for the marriage to be built on a healthy foundation. If she's still going to her parents for everything and taking their advice over her husband's, then she hasn't done the work yet and problems will arise. And by the way, same is true for men. We see a lot of men who haven't quite cut the apron strings yet and are too attached to their mothers. And that attachment needs to be severed, or at least largely loosened before he gets married if he wants to avoid inevitable problems in the relationship. So separation is the first phase, and there's an in-between phase when women, usually closer to the wedding day, sometimes on the wedding day itself, usually after the wedding day for a few weeks or a month, where she's in an in-between zone where she's not quite single anymore, not quite married, not quite sure who she is in this new role and in this new life. And that is characterized by numbness, disorientation. There's a real flipping on its head of her reality and her identity. And then the last phase is the rebirth, the new beginning, where, as I talked about, where she gets to explore new aspects of herself that are born. She feels a new stability in her life with the commitment of marriage, and she can use it as a launching pad to discover who she is in a whole new way, and perhaps it makes her question her job. Is this really the job that she wants to be in? Does she want to explore a job shift? Does she want to explore more of her passions, her creativity? So it's often a very exciting time for women if they've done the first two stages.
Gotcha.
So, you know, if she hasn't done the real work, again, that it doesn't, she doesn't get to experience the rebirth. It's this is not something I've made up. It's a pattern of transition that you can even see in nature. You know, you have the shedding of autumn leaves, you have the quiet time of winter, you have the rebirth of spring and summer.
Interesting. Is that where you mentioned at the beginning there's a post-wedding depression? If we haven't done our work in the separation, in the in-between, well, really the separation, then what happens to us? Is that where this depression comes in?
Mm-hmm. There's a crash after the wedding. There's everything that she's pushed aside, all of the fear, all the grief, all the loss, all the confusion, all the doubt comes crashing down on her after the wedding. Everything that she managed to avoid with the planning, because, you know, bridezilla has become a very big term in the last several years, but she's become that person where all she can focus on is the planning. She's been very controlled, very controlling, and then there's nothing left to do after the wedding. So in that blankness, in that empty state, all of the feelings come crashing down on her, and it can be very scary to then, after it's already done, be questioning and doubting and grieving and not understanding what's happening to her.
How would a woman who's experiencing that move through it?
Well, she would have to go back and do the work that didn't get done. So she would have to, first of all, understand that it's an important stage for her. It doesn't mean that she's made a mistake. It doesn't mean that she's in the wrong marriage. It means that she needs to grieve. She needs to acknowledge her fears and work through them. She needs to do everything that she didn't do while she was busily planning her wedding and staying, you know, on top of things 24/7.
Gotcha. Okay. So you talked about perfectionism, control. You know, definitely all these magazines we see, there's everything about the perfect wedding, and you sort of mentioned that before. How can we avoid that?
Well, the first step is to be aware, to be conscious that that's the pull in the wedding industry. I usually recommend to my clients to not look at bridal magazines, to turn off the TV as much as possible, to avoid romantic comedies because they're completely based on fantasy for the most part. So to go very internal and to try to shut out the media world, which is not going to help her in her process of being honest and being conscious. So most people that come to me do have a propensity towards perfectionism anyway. And once you get the ball rolling with the wedding, that perfectionist can usually get pretty out of control. So she needs to recognize that that's the tendency and do what she can to rein that in. And that usually means taking time to stop planning the wedding, and go inside. However she does it, whether she sits in solitude and quiet, whether she journals, that's the time to seek counsel, to, you know, set up some sessions with me and see what comes up for her so that she can slow down and start to feel her feelings. She's not going to be served at all by letting that perfectionist take over. She'll feel disconnected, completely disconnected from her partner. She'll approach her wedding day feeling like somebody else, because she is somebody else. She's being taken over by this demon called the perfectionist. And she'll probably have a lot of regret after her wedding because she won't be present for it at all.
It's almost as though control and striving for perfection are almost signs of how to avoid this post-bridal depression, because if you can grab it right there, because it sounds like that's a telltale sign. Hey, you're not feeling it. All your time's going that way. You've got to slow down and feel some things before this gets out of control.
It is. It's definitely a sign that something's not right. And if she's honest, again, even just for a minute, she'll say to herself, is this bringing me joy? Am I happy?
Yeah.
You know, do I feel connected to myself? Do I feel connected to my partner? Are we creating an authentic and meaningful wedding together? Am I including him in my decisions at all?
Right. Because I would think that would say something about how life would be, right?
Yes, her marriage, definitely. Everything that comes up during the engagement is a dress rehearsal for marriage.
So, whether we want to look at it or not.
Yes.
Okay, great. So let's talk about what if an engagement is super short and what if it's really long? What do we need to know?
If it's super short, the feelings will be condensed. She'll have to do a lot of work very quickly, and that's usually more challenging. When people say it takes a year to plan a wedding, they're usually talking about the practical aspects of planning a wedding, the site, the location, the flowers, the dress. When I say it takes a year to plan a wedding, I say it takes about a year to process what comes up emotionally and not feel rushed by it. If it's a very, very long engagement, that's fine. I don't have any problem with a long engagement. That just gives her more time to allow the feelings to work themselves through at their own time table. Mm. So I often encourage women to postpone their weddings if they haven't worked through enough of these feelings and the wedding is approaching too quickly. There's nothing wrong with postponing.
I like that. So say someone postpones their wedding and they do the work. How would somebody go about handling that? I mean, there's probably a lot of, especially in our day and age when just going for the wedding is like the big focus. Do you have any support for women who are thinking about postponing?
I do. I think it's a very courageous thing to do, and it's not an easy thing to do. But the women that I've worked with who have done it have been, on the whole, very happy that they've done it. And people around them have been, usually to their surprise, very supportive. So I think it's more in the anticipation of postponing than the actual postponement that is challenging.
Mm.
And I think women have the belief that if I postpone, it means I'm never going to get married. But I haven't found that to be true.
So most of the postponements ended up where the bride and groom, the engaged couple, actually did the work and then continued on that pathway.
I don't know if I could say most. I haven't done the statistics. I don't keep statistics like that, but I would say a lot if they do the work. And for some people, postponement is just a gentler way of ending the relationship. You know,
right.
It's just taking it in stages.
Yeah.
And they probably know that. Instead of just saying we're canceling and we're breaking it off, they go through a postponement period, and that's fine too.
Yeah, yeah. You know, what I appreciate about this conversation is that it's so not talked about, and you are such an advocate for people doing their work. It's amazing to me that it's not more supported.
It is, and it's been amazing to me in the 10 years since my book came out, and I've been doing this work for much longer than that, that it's still, people still get scared of thinking that there's an underside to an engagement. We're very committed in this culture to believing that an engagement is supposed to be only joyous, and I hate to say it, but I think a lot of it has to do with our multi-million or billion-dollar wedding industry. I can't remember which one it is, but there's a lot of money that goes into this industry.
Right.
There's a lot of people that have a lot invested in making brides, women feel like they have to measure up to a certain image and create that image on their wedding day, and that that means something, that that means that they have found their Prince Charming, that that means that they will have a fantasy wedding or a fantasy marriage.
Right.
When it means nothing. You know, you can get married with two people on a beach or in a forest and have the greatest marriage in the world. It doesn't mean a thing if you have the right flowers and the right dress and all of that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I went to a reception recently where the couple just took off into the mountains for a week, and they did their own ceremony together. They went off on their own. They got back together. And we received them when they came back from the mountains and had their reception. And I thought, wow, that is just so cool and so different, standing in the face of what their parents wanted. That takes courage, too.
It definitely does. And there's no right way to have a wedding these days, just like there's no right way to have a marriage. So it's really about the two people being very honest and authentic with each other about, you know, how do we want to make our commitment?
Yeah.
Who do we want present? Do we want to be in the presence of all of our friends and family and have those witnesses? That's a very beautiful thing to do. Do we want it to elope and just be the two of us in the mountains? That's beautiful as well. There's no right way. There's only the way that works for the couple, just like having a marriage.
Yeah. Good stuff. We're going to take another short break to support our sponsors. And listeners, feel free to send me an email at Alissa, A-L-I-S-S-A, at personallifemedia.com. Or you can call me and leave me a message at 206-350-5333. I'd love to hear your feedback, any questions you have, suggestions for people you'd love me to interview on the show. I'm Alissa Kreitman. I'm with Cheryl Paul, talking about some really important keys about being engaged, feeling your feelings, and how to actually have a marriage that works. And we'll be right back.
Listen to Living Green, Effortless Ecology for Everyday People, a weekly online audio program featuring champions of sustainable living at personallifemedia.com.
I'm Alissa Kreitman. We're talking today to bridal counselor Cheryl Paul. And, you know, I always love to include the men on my show. Can you tell us a little bit about what is going on for men during the engagement?
Mm-hmm. I think some men experience exactly everything that we've been talking about. I think most men have some subtler version of it. The difference being, as I mentioned earlier, that men are completely allowed, they have full permission to go through whatever they need to go through around the wedding. They're not expected to maintain this image of perfect bliss. They're actually expected to have cold feet. They're expected to question. They're expected to doubt. There's a recognition that they are leaving a phase of life. Men have a word to describe the identity that they're leaving behind, bachelor. There's no equivalent for women. So even in our language, we understand that men are leaving behind their singlehood, their bachelorhood. And there's an understanding that they might get scared. They might have moments of questioning or of doubt. And they're totally allowed to do that. So it's very different for men in that there is that permission. But that said, men are typically much less emotional than women, or emotionally connected, I should say. I don't actually think they're less emotional. Whatever they're feeling, they might not even be aware of. For men around a wedding, the big push is usually the proposal. That's when they have to muster up their courage, make their commitment, get the ring, figure out what they're doing, plan, get creative. So once they propose, a lot of men in their mind think, okay, my work is done. You know, now I just have to show up for the wedding. Less and less. I think that's the case. I think a lot of men do want to be involved in the planning, but emotionally, they've gotten themselves to the place where they're ready to commit, or else they wouldn't have proposed.
Right. Right. That's a good point. What do you have to say to women who have a particular idea about how she wants to be proposed to, the kind of ring that she wants? Things like that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fine to have that idea, but I think what's important is that she's able to let go of those ideas and go with the flow of what comes. And it can be a very interesting topic for her to explore, is what came up for her during the around the proposal, and was it, you know, good enough, and did it meet her expectations? And, you know, if she's a very controlling person, it's going to be hard for her to accept what comes, even if it's a great proposal, because it didn't fit the fantasy she had in her head.
Hmm.
So, again, everything is important for her to look at. Everything is usually symbolic, whether it's the proposal or the wedding dress or, you know, whatever it is that she can't let go of. It usually has a lot more energy around it than just the thing itself. So the proposal may bring up her issues around control and her inability to surrender and just, you know, allow her partner to take the lead sometimes. Her issues about her wedding dress may be symbolic about, you know, her fantasy around weddings. Wedding dress is a very big topic, and lots of feelings come up around the dress usually. Again, you know, it's not about the dress. It's about what the dress is holding for her.
That's interesting. It's interesting what you're saying. Like, each piece of putting a wedding together actually has a sort of symbology around it and can be keys and clues to where we need to let go of something or grow in a particular way. I didn't realize that.
Yep, absolutely.
Wow. Okay, cool. Well, we are almost out of time, but I want to ask you one final question. Your book has really amazing exercises at the end of each chapter. And like you said about doing the work, it's built into your book, and it's also built into your workbook, which I also highly recommend. But what's one practice you really enjoy that you want to recommend to women that they do as they're going through the engagement?
I think a great exercise is to write a goodbye letter to her single self. I think that it brings her into connection with the core of what this process is about, and allows her to let go and put words to what it is that she's actually letting go of.
Mm. Right, and again, being more conscious about it, you can actually face it, emote, whatever, and let it go and experience that death and not be afraid of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I liked what you said about that. Our culture is so death averse, but really, if you think about it, we don't even know what's going to happen tomorrow. It's like we can have all these fantasies like you were saying, but in reality, like, we don't know. All we can do is just true ourselves up and hold to that truth. Yeah.
That's right, and that's a very big issue that comes up for a lot of people during transition, is that sense of being, feeling out of control and tumbling towards the unknown, because marriage is a great big unknown, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows what the marriage is going to be like and how it will evolve over the years, and, you know, every transition is a big unknown. When you're about to have a baby, or when you are about to start a new job, or when you're moving, you're moving towards an unknown. And we tend to like what's known and what's familiar. We have a hard time with change. We have a hard time with, you know, letting ourselves feel out of control. And that's why the wedding is such a perfect venue for that controlling part of us, because there's so many places to grasp on and try to have control around the planning instead of just letting go and recognizing that we don't know. We don't know exactly what we're doing or where we're going or how we're feeling, and that's okay.
Yeah, that's such a good point. The planning becomes the thing to hold on to when you feel out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Nice point. All right. So tell us again how we can find you.
Through my website, consciousweddings.com, which has a great message board full of incredibly insightful, wise, wonderful women on there. Or if you're going through the transition of becoming a mother, it's consciousmotherhood.com.
Yeah, we'll have to have you back for Conscious Motherhood. I like that.
Great.
That is awesome. Cheryl Paul, thank you so much for the work you're doing in the world and how you're really uniquely helping women be their most empowered, especially during such a scary and transitional time. I really appreciate it. All listeners, you know, get these books. They're truly amazing. And we can see now why it's so important to do this kind of work, to have the conscious families that we want to have, you know, and raise our children to be conscious adults. And if we don't do the work, it's really going to end up in our families, I would think, yeah?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Who wants that?
Right.
So thank you so much for being on Just for Women today.
You're so welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you, everybody, for listening. For text and transcripts of this show and other shows on the Personal Life Media Network, just go to personallifemedia.com. I'm your host, Elisa Kreitman, always expanding your choices here on Just for Women, Dating, Relationships, and Sex. Tune in next week for more juicy news you can use.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.